We, the citizens of the city of Billings, for the purpose of establishing a just form of fundamental law, one that is responsible to the public for providing equal and adequate services and protections with efficient use of the community's revenue for all, one that provides for self-governing powers with respect to health, safety, and welfare of every citizen, and one that utilizes the utmost flexibility to plan for the future, do establish this charter for the City of Billings of the State of Montana. The Friday Packet with Stocky and Stout.
Another introduction.
Woo!
Yeah. Yeah. So.
It was rough last night. I'm not going to lie.
What'd you do?
I went to a concert at the Pub Station with AJ.
What was it?
Oh, the Wonder Years, the Warriors, Tiger's Jaw, and Tiny Moving Parts. Any of those bands strike a
knot? The Wonder Years, that's some great, I don't know, early 2000s-ish?
Yeah, they've been around for a while, 12-ish years.
I can only think of Joe Cocker when you say you went and listened to the Wonder Years. Just a little help from my friends for 45 minutes.
Yeah, I do kind of look like Fred Savage. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Minus the glasses. But
you have glasses. Does he not have glasses? I don't know.
No, he doesn't.
I don't know. He's super old and gross now. Doesn't matter.
He was a cutie, though.
He was. Total babe when he was 11.
All right, so our next guest.
That face, though.
On the Friday Packet is currently the co-host and producer of Resounds Arts and Culture on the High Plains, which airs every second and fourth Monday at 6:30 on YPR.
In theory, yes.
Yes. She is also the owner slash operator of Pen and Page, a website devoted to creating a voice for the arts and live music culture in the West. Along with these two endeavors, she is an adjunct professor at MSUB and is in the English department.
Truth.
A Billings area literary arts co-founder.
You are butchering my bio right now.
I'm just tearing it all apart.
He got it from Cambridge Analytica.
Where did you find all this? Man, I sound great.
Yes, and a Big Sky Writing Workshop instructor.
True, yes.
And a page.
And most recently.
I know, you forgot my latest jam.
Well, it wasn't.
You are now the lead singer of Pantera as well.
You know, I've always wanted to be in a hardcore band. I think I'd have a great growl.
I think you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for that.
All right, let's try that later.
Your recent gig.
You want to
what is it?
Oh,
we should explain it.
I am the new arts and entertainment reporter for the Billings Gazette.
Yes,
there it is.
As in the last month, actually, it's my fourth enjoy. So I have been helping put that publication out into the world for four cycles of the week.
Paginations? What's that word mean?
Oh, pagination. That's a fun oldie. That was my first job at the Gazette, actually. 10 years ago, I was nightside pagination. That's pretty much just what the paper, how you lay the paper out.
Oh, right on.
You paginate it.
Mm.
Yes. Oh.
All right. It was like a beauty contest or something.
Well, yeah, it gets a little hairy there at night.
So it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Lots of gowns.
Lots of gowns.
Yeah.
Should we do the five questions thing again?
Yeah, why not?
All right. So years you've lived in Billings. Question number one, how many years have you lived in the city of Billings?
An approximate 12 years. Actually, we might calculate that. I don't know. Long enough to have known to stay away from Joe Stout.
So, okay.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm here, actually.
Fair enough.
She recently moved away from
me. I did, actually. I got to sell my lovely home on Lewis, and I had some great neighbors. Joe was not one of them.
I was also neighbors with them.
Okay.
Yeah. And living in a small space, although not quite as small as this little studio in the backyard of some friends of mine. It was an old artist studio that they converted into an apartment. So
awesome.
It's a funky little place. But yeah, I've been around the block a few times here.
Gotcha.
Word.
Question two. Your favorite joke. Do you have one? If you don't have a favorite joke, maybe a favorite comedian?
Ooh. Well, I when I was bartending a lot, got told a lot of jokes. Most of them weren't really that funny.
Fair enough.
I always had to give the caveat that if it was sexist, racist, or homophobic, I wasn't really into it. And that leaves pretty much no jokes left. So, right. You know, I do carry a good oldie. Why did the golfer wear two pairs of pants?
What is that?
Well, in case he got a hole in one, of course.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did have the joy of recently interviewing Kevin Farley and learned not to ask him too many questions about his brother. So that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't like that, huh?
Well, you know, I'm sure everybody's asked him everything in the world. So.
Sure.
But he was a very kind person to talk to.
That's good.
Yeah. Excellent.
That's so maybe good. I'd throw him on my list of favorite comedians.
Okay. Are you a podcast listener at all?
Yes. And I actually would love to get our show on YPR onto podcasting. I'm not sure why we haven't yet. Okay. So I think podcasts are a great way to consume information on your terms and your time. And so for the radio, for instance, most of the people that I talk to aren't really around the radios at 6:30, the second and third Monday of the month.
Right.
I mean, where are you on, you know, next Monday at 6:30 p.m.?
Council.
Yeah.
Oh, well, actually. See, now you have to go to the website and stream it. And I think podcasting is a much easier way to grab that information when you need to. So
awesome. Do you have a favorite one that you go to?
You know, I tend to turn them on when I travel, and I really got into Serial's latest about the watchmaker. It was so well done. What the heck was it called?
Not S-Town, but
yeah, is it
a new one? Right?
It's their new one. The new one by because it stands for Shittown. Mm-hmm. How family-friendly are we? We can say shit, right?
Oh, we can say whatever the fuck we want.
Oh, nice. Okay, good to know.
My family always says shit. That's fine with me.
That was such a great one to listen to on a long road trip because it's this really compelling narrative. I can't imagine how much information that they had to sort through and sift to present this storyline. And we're in this sort of binge culture anyway. And so podcasting is so great. If you want to binge those stories, you just can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that one I really got into. And for a while there, I was a big Dan Savage fan. After a while, though, he got a little pretentious for me. He thinks, you know, the world revolves around big cities. And especially after the election, it became this interesting time to look at how media was talking about what was going on in our country. And mm-hmm. I kind of thought that really where those kinds of movements happen, where change happens, is in these smaller communities that I think larger cities tend to live in these bubbles, and they don't necessarily get a chance to look outside of them and see what's happening in communities such as, you know, Billings. So
sure. So Harmontown kind of got like that. I don't know if you listened to that one ever before with Dan Harmon.
Mm-hmm.
He writes Community
and
what's the Rick and Morty?
Yep,
he did Harmon that Quest. But he kind of went off the deep edge, or the deep end.
Yeah, and I loved the New Yorker. When he
got elected, it was constant. It was just relentless. It sort of got off track on what he does best, which is just incoherent, you know?
Yeah, it surprised everybody. Yeah. And I think it was interesting to listen to the New Yorker Radio Hour at that time to kind of listen to how they were just grappling with how wrong they were in predicting, you know, what was to come. Mm-hmm. So it's been an interesting time to listen to and be in media, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's two. Is that two questions?
I think three.
I think I'm sweating.
You're sweating?
It's warm in here. It's just
the questions.
It's probably me.
It's anticipation. It's probably
me. I put out a lot of heat.
Yeah.
Favorite podcast. Tell us something about Billings that maybe you think Joe and I would not know. Maybe it'd be a historical fact or, you know, just a random factoid.
Well, I have just spent quite a bit of time in Will James's history for a piece that's coming out in Fridays in Joy. So that would be my Friday dump. What are we calling this?
The Friday packet.
Friday package dump.
Yeah, if anybody's promoting anything from now on, I'm just going to call it the Friday Dump.
I think we just changed the name.
What do you got to dump on us this week?
Taking a dump with Stocky and Stout.
Don't forget your phone.
Yeah, so my marketing advice is free at this point, just so you guys know. I start charging after the first 15 minutes. So
makes sense.
I wanted to explore this narrative of the West that, you know, was very romanticized, and I went up to this cabin that was purported to be a place where Will James would go to, you know, sleep it off. And no one in the historical records can even confirm this. There's one picture that exists of the Snooks with Will James in front of this cabin that you can access. If you go up to the Pictograph Caves, there's a little pull off for the Four Dances area.
Okay.
And since I'm finding this little cabin, I've been told by a lot of people to shh, don't tell people where it is, but it's right by the city. I mean, you can just look out and see Billings and Metro Park and all the development and the urban areas. And mm-hmm. It was interesting to think about even just 100 years ago, what our cityscape looked like. And Will James did have a home on Smoky Lane. And actually that was named after his famous novel, Smoky the Cow Horse, which he wrote in the 30s, and it won the Newbery Award. And that's kind of what spurred him to fame. He spent his later years in life in Billings, actually. He lived on Smoky Lane for 5 years before he died. And he had a home there that is still in existence. It's an old sandstone structure, just kind of nestled into the ground. And it used to be just a pasture, fenced in with a gate. And he had two horses by his side. It was very romanticized West, but it was actually this true life story that this person lived. I think he came here to create a character out of himself, and he became that character. And the West gave you the opportunity to be whoever you want. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to somebody else, and he says, you know, we can still do that. I mean, we can go anywhere and be whoever we want. You know, I can go to Seattle and start a girl rock band if I wanted to.
You sure could.
So I don't know how unusual that idea is, but in the early 1900s, there was definitely this idea that the West was a place of wide, expansive opportunity to recreate yourself.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Smoky Lane.
Smoky Lane. And they changed the dang spelling of it to Smokey, but the book is Smoky. So just a little spelling tip for all you listeners out there.
Okay. It's off of Rimrock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By one block west of 13th, going north. Interesting.
Yeah, and so at that time, in the early 1900s, it was a couple miles outside the city, and it was prairie and pasture. Mm-hmm. So get up top of Zimmerman, and I like looking out over the rims and thinking about this city before it was so developed. Oh. And also thinking about it being a big old body of water.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Inland Sea.
Yeah.
Awesome. So,
yeah, you succeeded. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's cool. I want to.
Oh, yay. I win. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
5 stars.
Okay. Yeah. So the cabin's a little tricky to find. I'll have to tell you off the record.
That sounds good. No problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite, fifth and final question? What's your favorite part about Billings?
Well, I like how small this town is in some capacities because we are here for those reasons. As in, I was neighbors with Joe and interviewed Joe for a piece in The Enjoy. And you mentioned my friend AJ, which now I know why he's late on his graphic design project for me, because he was out rocking and rolling with you the other night.
He was a perfect gentleman the entire night. He did not spend $100 on records last night at all.
Oh, he's got a great record collection. We were just chatting about that the other day.
He does. He's gone off the deep end. He's going for it.
And I think that I have at times, many times, have a love-hate relationship with Billings because I have craved a bigger community where I can have anonymity and I can just sort of be. I love going out east, being in Boston, for instance, and just nobody cares who you are, what you're doing, what your business is. You just do your thing. You really aren't under any kind of microscope. And here, not like everybody's, you know, in your business if you don't want them to be, but it's just kind of a familiar place to be. And I think in that familiarity, we are able to support one another. There's not a lot of infighting. There is still this hunger to build a beautiful arts and cultural scene in our city, and we have that opportunity where, let's just say I would live in Seattle, I wouldn't have nearly the opportunities that I have. I've had the lucky fortune to teach poetry to elementary school kids and also adjunct at a collegiate level and do performance poetry and write about the beautiful cultural events that we have here. And that is all happening right in a very small geographic area. Mm-hmm. I think that that is the gem of Billings, is how hard we work for what we have and how unique it is because of its isolation.
Mm-hmm. For sure. You bring up the budding artist community. You were part of the Art Space project that you pushed, mm-hmm. or you brought to a work session.
That was fun.
And at City Council. and on this podcast, we kind of focus on City Council stuff, what's happening in the Friday packet.
And the sort dump, of go, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dump. I mean, when we just take a dump every Friday, usually. what would you say you gleaned from that experience going into that setting and offering up your great idea and just not necessarily getting completely shot down, but getting shot down?
Oh, there's so many pieces of this that I could unpack. But what I took away from it was many things. One, it is overwhelming to get up in front of the city council. It is a strange format. I listened to a few of your previous podcasts as you talk about the different ways that we can access our city government. And I don't think that a lot of us really do exercise that right. But I have seen that change recently, especially with city council members who maybe we don't agree with, who represent us in our districts. Now there are a lot more individuals willing to step up and say, hey, I want to make a change and I don't like the way that you're doing this, so I'm going to see if I can't do it differently. And I don't think that maybe we had as much focus on that as we have in the past. I had a young friend who got up in front of the council and testified and on behalf of Art Space. It was the first time he'd ever been to the council meetings, first time he'd ever been in front of the city council. And he really got fired up because there were some pretty harsh comments about artists that were said during that meeting, which I'd like to sidebar and get back to this idea that, quote, artists are starving for a reason. Sidebar, come back. But from that came Waste Division, and Waste Division is a wonderful arts collective that brings an online presence and shares great stories, writing, photography. Mm-hmm. It's quirky, and Beatnik City Council came from that because, you know, they wanted to basically create a conversation around the idea of being a beatnik, which honestly, I don't really know if that's much of an insult. You know, I'd take that any day over some of the other things I've been called.
Right.
But yeah, you know, why would the city want to subsidize housing for beatniks? Well, frankly, we need more affordable housing any way we can get it. Mm-hmm. And Art Space is a solid project. Unfortunately, there are some things in the way, and I think it's how we talk about art and artists in our community, which I'll pull that starving artist sidebar back. Because I believe when we label an artist as starving, we've done them a great disservice. And you look at maybe what's happening right now in the eBird, for instance. I will also have a story coming out about the Red Ox campus and this development to create more work housing for artists. Not necessarily live work housing, which is what Art Space is about, but a place for them to commune and create. And craftspeople, people who work with their hands, who create specialized products for, you know, beauty or for function, they need places to work. And, you know, that Red Ox is a big supporter of manufacturing and small art and business owners. So they've got a sign company down there. They've got Melissa of Girlwood doing a lot of stuff within our community. She's hand lettered the new menu boards over at the B&B 406 B&B. I don't know. I think they just pulled some names out of a hat, honestly.
You know, the new chap room down on off of Grand there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Just some cool buzzwords, but anyway, gotcha. It's going to be a beautiful space.
Okay. kind of circling back to the thing. What was the thing you brought towards the council? What was it? Was it called? What was it? Just a funding package, or you just had some?
Yeah, we you know, basically ArtSpace needs a fiduciary sponsor, and they need a city to sign on to it. And this, of course, was when there were low income tax credits available, and that's primarily how ArtSpace is built and funded. They come into a community, they rehab an old building, and they in turn give back to the community in housing and in creative culture. So the bottom floor, if you can imagine, this would be space for nonprofits or businesses and shops and just, you know, people selling and then workshop culture, things of that nature. And then up top, you would have live workspace where artists would have space to live and work. It's basically paid for through the low income tax credits, and ArtSpace works in communities where cities are on board, where they want to see a creative culture being developed in some of these blighted buildings that honestly aren't doing any service to the community. Mm-hmm. So they're interested in communities that want them. And I just don't think our community said, yes, we want that. Not, at least our city council didn't.
Okay.
But from that came a lot of conversations about how we can do this differently.
Okay.
And a lot of hunger for a way to find, like I said, you know, Waste Division or Red Ox or any of these other places where we're finding creative ways to get our art into the community. And we're not starving. Mm-hmm. We're functioning and very important members of the community that are economically driving this bus. Mm-hmm. I mean, Montana's fourth in the nation for fine artists per capita. And just imagine the other kinds of arts and crafts and beautiful things being made here. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful place to come as a writer. You have an incredible cityscape and mountains and everything that you could possibly need to have fuel to write, which is why I think people are attracted. Again, back to the idea of the Wild West. You can come here and be whoever you want to be. Mm-hmm. I hope that wasn't rambling.
No, it wasn't. It was perfect.
No, nice. It wasn't rambling at all. I'm going to open a window, get the ambiance in here.
Please, yeah, we need some more lawnmower sounds. I was going to make them with my mouth, but that's way more convenient.
It really is.
So out of curiosity, I think every time I've asked somebody why they've ended up in Billings, it's always followed up, well, why'd you stay when that didn't work out? So why Billings, and then why'd you stay when that didn't work out?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you asked the question, because I'm in a very interesting place right now where I've come full circle. I came to Billings to work for the Billings Gazette. My undergraduate is in journalism, and I was the staff photographer at the Sheridan Press in Sheridan, Wyoming. And
beautiful this time of year.
It is, but man, you know, Joe, it's small.
Yeah, it's little.
And I was chasing way too many dead cows on the side of a road. And just kidding. Sheridan has a lot of great news happening, but I just wanted a bigger community.
No.
And, you know, I'm from Wyoming. I like the West. I like the mountains. My family has a homestead in the Bighorns. It's where my family, you know, is from. So I'm glad to be here. And I tried to go away, and it didn't work out so well. I think I just didn't know what I wanted. But anyway, sure. I moved here to work for the Billings Gazette, and gosh dang it, I was going to get a job with them. And I think 6 interviews later, I ended up in the glamorous department of Nightside Pagination. And
it does sound good.
Yeah, I like that idea of it being a pageant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have had a lot of different experiences since then, and I'm now back at the Gazette after 10 years. I've been gone from that business, and now I'm back, and it's very full circle to me. It's an awesome opportunity to talk about arts and culture in our community, and it's an awesome opportunity to talk about artists in a different way too. You know, I mean, yeah. I think we have so much happening here, and so there's a conversation that we can have about the arts that makes it accessible. I don't think that all art has to be broken down into the easiest bits to digest, but I also think that there's a way for us to recognize that there's art everywhere. I was walking downtown and I walked by a woman painting the largest mural that I think ever existed in our city in the parking garage.
Inside the parking garage.
Beautiful. Yep. Fascinating. Public art is an important way to showcase somebody of that talent. And then have art everywhere. I mean, everywhere you look, there's people creating beautiful things in our city.
Absolutely. So what's different about the Gazette from last time you worked there?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, you can, you don't have to spill any secrets or anything, but how's it feel?
I know no secrets. No, it feels good. There's a great team of people there doing really important work. And I think that the heart of any newspaper is its journalists and its ear to the ground and its desire to share stories about people who live and work in our communities. So, and also we're gatekeepers and, you know, there's important work to be done to hold people accountable. And so I feel like I'm like the dessert of the paper, you know. You get to Friday and you've been through all the things that have happened in the week and you get to have a sweet little piece of cake with enjoy. But
that's nice. Well, there's a lot of new blood, a lot of young people working at the Gazette these days.
Yeah, I agree. And they bring a fresh eye and a lot of energetic perspective to it. And journalism is alive and well, and content looks different than it did 10 years ago. That's one of the biggest changes for me, is watching new media unfold. New media in quotations at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, content looks so different than it did back then. And now everybody can be a revolutionary on Twitter. You know, don't underestimate your powers to have a voice. But also it comes with a cost, a great cost now that we know how much is being thrown at us. And so I would like to see a return to print. And I think that there will be a resurgence in that. There's such a comfort to holding a paper that I'd forgotten about, because I'm just as guilty as every other millennial out there that didn't subscribe to the paper and just went online until my free clicks expired. I'm as guilty. But being back in a print-based product, although we do spend a lot of time online in our presentation and what we put into the world, we can be a lot more responsive now. But I love that feeling of welcoming a story into your life. So there's all these platforms that you can consume news now online for the things that you need to know. Like, it's important when there's flooding alerts happening. The Gazette's a very key player in keeping people informed and hopefully keeping them safe. And if you want to sit back with a piece of paper and enjoy the story and not be interrupted by a lot of bombardery advertising, you know, that's priceless, that I think. So anyway, I hope to see a return to print.
Gotcha. How's your paper delivery going?
It never happened.
Really?
No. But that's a different story.
That's not Anna's deal. It just brought it to mind. I know you've been having a little bit of trouble.
Since December, I've been trying to get them to deliver, and, you know, four emails later and four telephone conversations. It seems what Lee Enterprises has been, like, consolidating, and I don't know if I just got lost in the ether or what the deal was, but I tried desperately to get the paper, and
I'll get you a local number.
Okay.
There you go.
There's help for you.
That's why we brought you.
Because I love the paper. I love reading those stories. I like the local stories. And I feel like anytime you go online, it is so sensationalized. It's so, you don't get the entire picture, but you can look at a headline and say, you just stop reading. You just, oh, well, that's true. So you just throw that over there.
Well, and I
when you're with paper, you just sort of, it's there. You have all the information in front of you. That's what I've always liked about it.
Or you just go straight to the comments just to see how pissed off you can get.
Oh, yeah.
Just read the headline and then hit the comments on Facebook just to see what's...
It's interesting how few people read.
Yeah, it is.
And we do have a scroll culture, and I talk about it a lot in my college classes, to be very aware of what the internet is doing to your brain. Mm-hmm. And I think that we do need to reach people in these different platforms, these conversations are important to have online. But if you're just scrolling and that's your habit, what are you building? You know, and when you see something but you don't read it, you're not consuming it, you're not being an active citizen in your community. And so I would hold people accountable for the information that they're consuming. And I say that in my college classes too. You know, I want you to be an active participant in information. Don't just be passive. And plus also recognize some of this digital stuff, it's not real.
Yeah.
That's not real life. Mm-mm. People would never say the kinds of things that they get to say on the internet to our faces.
Right. So. Nobody knows you're a dog.
Yeah. I'd like to humanize that a bit more.
So I was just going
okay.
The discussion about the return of print. That's interesting because I was just having a talk with one of my fellow board members on Pedal United. And we have our little events and we have our updates and our newsletters and shit like that that we put out on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And so many people are like, I didn't see it. It's not there. And the bike club that existed in Billings like 20 years ago, they used to once a month print out like a Xerox page and take it to all the bike shops, drop it off at the one brewery that was here. And people used to pick them up and read them all the time.
Yeah.
And we're going back to that.
Yeah, I think that there's a great place for tabloids and for zines and for the tactile nature of information.
I feel weird saying the word zines because I'm so old, but that's exactly what I have in mind when I suggested this. Because it's,
I made a zine.
Did you?
I hand stapled it myself.
100% sure. We know a fella who used to make zines. He was a janitorial employee, and so he'd clean these office buildings at night. He'd have the proof in his pocket, and he'd copy them off on their copiers.
Love it.
While he was cleaning them.
Yeah, we weren't very punk rock. We just went to Kinko's.
Yeah, well, you know,
we had a friend's mom's credit card, so
that works.
That's if punk you rock, it
Kinkies,
right?
Yes, yeah,
absolutely. Especially if it's an American Express.
Yeah,
ooh, that's very punk. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they're not accepted everywhere that Discover is, so.
No.
You're on the fringes.
So dealing with the youth of today, what have you, you know, like, circling back to the you know, your
teaching. That was a great old band, by the way.
Yeah.
Nobody
speaking
knows
of the kids of America.
The Sonic Youth of today.
Yep. What have you noticed change over time since, you know, when you were coming up as a kid, now with a new generation of kids, you know, absorption of news and how they, you know, learn about the world in general. I mean, because there's no shortage of stuff they can draw their attention.
Yeah. I call myself one of the last of the analogs. I was a 1980 baby. So I grew up without a digital childhood, but yet in college I began to have a cell phone and social media. And so I'm one of the last to know that. I think all of us in this room are some of the last to have that analog childhood. And so I think that it does give us a good perspective to see what life was like before that, but how important digital life has become. And so if you have always had access to digital technology, you're going to have to figure out that balance. And I teach in the elementary schools, and my teachers will use technology when the kids write. But I kind of prefer them not to, because they're asking Alexa how to spell. And I think that they perhaps should just be okay with learning it in a different way, or making those mistakes and not worrying about spelling, and just worry about writing, just get it out. But they comprehend poetry at a very young age. This is a language that we all speak. Poetry is a metric that came to us. I'll borrow this from our Montana poet laureate, Joel Yeager. Sorry, I always get tongue-tied on his name. But he talked about the rhythms of poetry come in the womb, because it is this heartbeat that we've all kind of grown up with. And even before we were born, we were in these metrics of poetry. And so the kids, they get that. They get the language and the beauty. But when it comes to write, they have a disconnection. Mm-hmm. And they have a disconnection at a very young age. So if we're not getting them pen to paper in third grade or even kindergarten, if they're not writing or journaling or expressing themselves in creative formats, by the time they get to college, oh man, you know, I mean, I've seen so many fragments in my life. I just can't hardly stand it. And I also get frustrated when I have to explain what a fragment is. And so now I sound like a snob, but it's not a complete sentence. Like, why can't you write in a complete sentence?
It's because it's okay for people to know what a fragment is. That's not very snobbish.
Yeah. I just think that we're constantly replying so quickly in our world that our fragments have become a part of our daily life. And I just would like to see a little bit more attention paid to the long format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And this might just be the company that I keep, but since this is a small town, our friend group is vast and of many different ages. And I see more scrutiny from our early to mid 20s friends than I do among our, say, baby boomer friends. Hmm. Just they seem to analyze stuff that they see online a lot better than, say, their parents, who seem to fall prey to this.
It's good to hear. Often. Yeah, that critical thinking component. I think younger folks get the bad rap that they're not able to critically think. They're not processing information. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they are. They just are doing it in different ways, and ways that maybe we don't understand because we had a different way of interacting with information.
Yeah.
So I do think that we're running the risk of being these skimmers of information where we're never taking deep dives. And
sure.
That's why I do enjoy podcasting, for instance, because it gives you an opportunity to deep dive. Mark Maron, I saw him a few years ago in Boston and somebody asked him the question, you know, why are your podcasts so long? I mean, the average attention span is 12 minutes. And he goes, I don't give a fuck about the average attention span. I'm not going to just create something because that's what's expected. And I love that idea. Like, let's not become the snake eating its tail. Let's not just keep feeding people what we think that they want. Let's tell really good stories in different ways. And let's not just assume that nobody has an attention span or a critical thinking capacity to dive into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That frustrates me. And I think that our youngest citizens do get the bad rap for that. And they're far more energetic and intelligent than perhaps the older ones among us.
It's funny because they grew up in the early days of the internet with mm-hmm. their parents saying, now be careful what you do on the internet. You never know who any of these people are. They might be fake. They might be trying to take advantage of you. And I feel like they learned that. And then the parents completely forgot their own advice.
Yeah, it's sort of like the nothing good happens after midnight advice, you know, for the analog kids.
Yep. That's a gremlin philosophy, I believe.
I think so, yeah. Like, that's what it's called.
Also my father's, God forbid, we step into the house after midnight.
Oh boy. That's when all the best shit happened.
It really is.
How about last night? Did that go okay?
Oh, that started at like 6 or 7. You know, it's perfect for me.
If you hurry, yeah, and get it all over with before midnight.
That's another nice thing about Billings is that we do have a bit of an earlier culture because of our brewery laws, which I think they're tied to live music sometimes.
Yeah, I agree.
Get those shows done.
Yep.
But
yeah, get you drunk and in bed by 9.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, it's not too many, you know. The pub station is great because I can walk from my house to the pub station or anything that's happening downtown. And that is far and away the reason that I live where I do. So centrally located.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder about people who don't come downtown. What the hell do they do?
They like to post on the internet about how much puke there is downtown.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw a homeless guy down there once.
Oh, there's more than one apparently.
Almost. I barely escaped with my life.
I wonder about larger cities. Like, have you not been to a larger city? Because there's homeless everywhere.
Yeah. I think the answer is no.
Not a Billings specific problem.
No.
This is a cultural problem.
It's not a problem to ignore, but I mean, come on. If you've walked through Seattle or God, Los Angeles, this is fine.
I do think that there's something interesting to be said about a city as it grows, downtown becomes a place that you access for special events, for mm-hmm. unique things. It becomes the experiential economy that Lisa Harman tuned me into that word when mm-hmm. she was still with the Downtown Billings Association. And our downtown is shifting into that experiential economy. So if you're in a larger city, you know, you head downtown for special events. But other than that, everything you need, all your needs are met within your bedroom community or your, you know, your vicinity. So I think the West End is developing these places of accessibility for them where they don't have to necessarily leave to get anything out sure. that they need. And so downtown's become a more specialized experience. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're nice places to go out of downtown. Mm-hmm. Good restaurants and everything. Not dogging on any of that. But, yeah, I mean, all the special event stuff. Most of the good shows. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. And I've never once felt unsafe.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that we are very fortunate to live in a community that, again, takes such good care of each other.
Yeah.
So you're right. I've not felt unsafe either, but yeah. mm-hmm. I think it's a lifestyle priority too. Yeah. And I got really clear, when I sold my home and moved into a very small space, what I needed in my life. And this isn't for everyone. I mean, I downsized to about 500 square feet and, it helped me get really clear on what I needed in life. And so a small house to me mm-hmm. is perfectly comfortable, but I do know people that need a lot more space and there's a lot more elbow room out there. You yeah. know, there's a lot and of and bigger
if you
houses.
Want to do that and that's the way you see your life going, I'm all for it. Go for it. But you don't
we're
need to
West End hating.
Yeah.
Right now.
You don't need to rag on people.
Us
you know, that,
versus
yeah.
them.
I know like two people who live out there and they are nice people,
but you never see them, right?
No, that doesn't happen.
She's going to come in.
Oh,
yep.
Oh,
here
speaking
comes the
of,
Sammy dog.
Hi, Sammy.
Mascot, come on.
You coming?
Oh, that feels nice. That does feel nice.
What else, Stout?
I think Anna's going to get mad at us if we don't do this for a really long time. She just said okay. that everybody's skimmers.
All right, don't skim.
What else you got?
Oh, man. I need some more Tenhide,
obviously.
Apparently.
That's the universal truth.
Speaking of, you know, affordable housing, I just noticed that they ripped down the Rimview Inn, which,
yeah.
you know, in hindsight seems like a, you know, a nice place to put some affordable housing that they're just going to put a bank on top of.
Or sober living.
Or, you know, sober living sure, or some sort of transitional housing.
Yeah, short-term housing for the hospitals, yeah.
It just seems like these things can sometimes happen in Billings. You're like, well, why weren't they talking about this before we built a... You know, 500 or 5,000 square foot bank and with a giant parking lot. Who does that serve?
Yeah.
I wish. There's Zoe goes.
Hi.
I don't know a whole lot about this particular time period, but Billings did tear down a lot of its beautiful old historic buildings. I think around the 80s, we were guilty of removing a lot mm-hmm. of great structures. But there's still some great old buildings that need some love. And mm-hmm. I think as our economy continues to grow, we'll see that continue. But
you know, I think Billings just kind of barely made it under the wire and the economic feasibility of tearing down that historical stuff. We did lose some good stuff, but luckily it just didn't pay. In Billings to rip that stuff down. Property values weren't high enough to make it pencil out, which is good. And I think that's kind of just a good lucky blessing mm-hmm. that we still have some of those old treasures floating
yeah.
around. Because it was absolutely a plan. And I think Lisa talked about this in our last podcast, but it was absolutely a plan to tear down the the Babcock and put on some kind of multi-level parking structure big, like a corporate-owned mall mm-hmm. situation right there. And I'm really glad that we kept that thing.
Yeah, and the Alberta Bear Theater's heading into an $11 million remodeling
right.
project. And mm-hmm. what that's going to do is allow them to stage bigger shows. They yeah. don't have the rigging for it, and so they can bring a lot more of those Broadway shows that we're losing. And this is an mm-hmm. interesting... thing as we notice our Montana arts community growing, there's a large music culture in Missoula, we have these huge amphitheaters. They're attracting a lot of great music. I've got some friends going to see the Flaming Lips this weekend. I mean, Bon Iver had one of only like 7 dates in the U.S. up in Missoula. So they're routing a lot of cool bands, and because they have the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is if you build it. I think a lot of it too is routing, and Billings sometimes gets the bum end of the deal on routing. But that theater, the Alberta Bear Theater, is one of the last theaters built by the Fox Company, I believe. Fox Corporation.
Really?
Yeah, it was one of their last theaters.
Interesting.
A little another tidbit about Billings you may not know.
There you go. Old Fox Theater.
Yeah. And if you ever just want to nerd out on old school Billings, go say hi to Kevin at the Western Heritage Center.
It's so much fun.
Holy moly. There's much stuff to dig into. Yeah. And so I think as we get a little bit more nostalgic and we start to recognize the value of these institutions, like the Babcock. I mean, what a beautiful Art Deco theater that is at great risk of decaying, and it needs love. And thank goodness for the ambition of some of our younger citizens over at the Art House to want to really take that on as another place to show movies, which is what it was originally known for. I'm sure that there's lots of residents out there that have great memories of seeing shows there. So
yeah. And my old boss Greg has some nice memories at the Fox when it was he wasn't old enough to attend the movies that he did see there, but yeah basically. I think he saw Fritz the Cat there when he was in high school.
Nice.
Basically the first cartoon porn. Yeah. He enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? I know the Gazette was big in the Freedom of Information Act, trying to get the officer's name for the I wrote it down as Sexy Times. Police Sexy Times.
That's the official term, yeah.
That is the official term. That they released the woman's name, so it seemed like haphazardly, in my opinion. And sort of withheld their name for so long.
I think that one of the roles of journalists and of journalism is that gatekeeper role, and also to just make sure that our public institutions are being held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason they didn't want to release him is because it was an internal kind of disciplinary situation. Mm-hmm. They hadn't broken any laws. The lady that they were involved with had.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean.
In hindsight, this seems like a really bad idea.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
There's been lots of opinions about that.
I've read a few of them on Facebook as it happens.
Well, that's been an interesting shift, too, as the comments are now, moved over to Facebook. It does definitely become this bully in the schoolyard and who can push the hardest. But. Yeah, I'm surprised at the things that people will say to you online, again, that wouldn't happen in face-to-face communication. So I think the more that we get out there and have these conversations in our communities as opposed to trying to do them digitally and isolated, it is an isolating experience. So let's have these conversations together and continue to stay informed, but
absolutely,
continue to talk about them. I think it's important to give a face to information. So.
Yeah.
Well, listeners don't know that Stocky has a neck tattoo that says "Shut up, libtard." So he's not afraid to say that stuff face to face.
And I don't know what ever possessed you to get that face tap.
It was 1999. Candlebox was big in Seattle. Got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Lucy was a great album.
What's like a not get a tattoo that says that on it?
No.
Obviously.
Easy choice.
I'm graduating high school. Of course I'm going to get a neck tattoo.
Candlebox. Jesus Christ.
It seems there's so much information out. It's interesting to me that there is, like Twitter and Facebook that is meant to connect so many people, and yet so many people aren't connected.
You can downfall an entire empire by one racist tweet. Hello.
Yeah. It seems to happen so fast.
You're
it has the best
the
of both.
House.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Happens to best of both, has the best of both worlds. Like, it's not, completely all bad, but it's not completely all good. I don't I want to say there's healthy digestion of the information that's out there on the internet between people, but I just, it seems like that algorithm does not want you to see that. They want to, you know, the clicks, they want to see the clicks, they want to draw your attention and get as much traffic as possible. And it sort of plays into the, like what you were saying, have the big, long-winded conversations about it. And it's, can feel uncomfortable, but you know, you got to do it.
Yeah. I definitely don't want to be guilty of the, what's that word of the snake eating its tail? The Aurora Borealis? No, wait, that's the Northern Lights. Yes.
No, it's perfectly right. Oh, shit. What is that word? All right, you guys talk. I'm going to look it up.
Snake eating its tail?
Yeah, it's a hoop. Mm, it's and a it's, hoop. There's rings and there's all kinds
it's
of
not
ancient
a perfect
imagery.
Circle of the band.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, it is?
I think maybe there's Harry Potter involved to it. Oh. Yeah.
I was going to go with Neverending Story.
You know, ooh, good one.
A circle with a bunch of snakes in it.
Perfect.
Is that it?
Please do.
Yeah, yeah. And that
a
fluffy
trail?
White
can we just call it a trail?
Flying dog?
Tray. Yep. It's the Ouroboros.
Oh, thank you.
Ouroboros.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's very old.
How old
serpent
is it?
Or dragging. Funny you should ask. It is historical representations, ancient Egypt. Yep, ancient Egypt.
All right.
There you go.
They really knew what was up.
Yep, those guys. They are nutty. Yep. So, it's as old as ancient Egypt is, and I don't know how old that is.
Well, how about for you guys? I want to ask you guys something.
What do you got?
What the hell do you know? Like, what's your...
Zero. That's an
what's
easy
your
one.
Scoop? Tell me something I don't know about Billings.
Charles Lindbergh worked in an oil change place on First Avenue North where the adult diaper store is right now for
good
like 8
one.
Months because he was coming through town doing a parachuting show and it went bust while it was in Billings and so he was stuck here for 8
went
months.
Bust. This seems like a pun that was intended.
No, I never intend a pun. Not that clever. It's always dumb luck.
Excellent
anyway,
work.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And he worked on bikes there. Anyway.
Good God. On the spot.
Yeah. Carmen Miranda was born in Laurel.
Right? No.
Just made that.
I was thinking Carmen Electra, and that got even
also
weirder.
Also her. Both of them. All famous Carmens come from Laurel.
So we know that... there was a housing development to the south of the sugar beet factory called Colonia.
Oh, yeah.
They were a CMU, you know, like houses. So they'd have the seasonal workers that would come into town and help harvest all the sugar beets. And they would live, they try to make this, you know, community behind the sugar beet factory where all the workers would live. And they called it Colonia.
Yep. You would live there. You would be separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely sounds like a movie starring Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Not
let's
the
do
number,
it.
Not the number 23, but
no.
One of those other ventures. No.
Shit.
That's kind of a reach.
Yeah.
That's
no, it's okay. I'll
there's that one.
We can't give away all our secrets.
I can't.
Yeah. Why are you here?
That's a good question. Nobody's figured that one out.
Mm. You like it here, though.
I do like it here. I just came here for to go to MSUB. Mm. And then the follow-up question is, why did I stay when that didn't work out? And
it's because they changed names, because you came up when they was still Eastern?
I wanted to go to Eastern.
Oh, okay.
Joe's actually 72.
Yeah, I don't think that's a secret.
He actually
I'm almost
founded
as old as
MSUB.
Joel. Yeah, yeah.
It used to be MSUJ. When they said, no,
yeah.
It's got to be the name of the city.
I was the Vince McMahon of MSUB.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that's, it was, you know, one of those things where you try something and it doesn't work out and you go broke and get divorced.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Am I preaching to the choir?
I know that storyline.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
It's universal. It's a tale as old as time. Mm-hmm. Sing the rest of that song now, please.
Song as old as rhyme.
Yeah, yeah. Beauty and the Joe. That's it's what like, we should call this episode, because, like,
Joe, yeah?
It's perfect.
Beauty, Joe's.
Beauty and the Joes, yeah.
Beauty and the Joes.
Oh.
Who gets to be the teapot? Oh. Who gets to be Angela Lansbury?
Sammy.
Sammy?
Oh. Sammy definitely sounds like Angela Lansbury in her own head.
Yeah. Kind of does.
Yeah.
There's a strong Stockholm syndrome to that movie as well.
Oh yeah, it's hot.
Okay.
That's the only way I've ever made a relationship work. Oh. I took a lot of notes.
You did.
Man, we're up against so much these days.
I'm telling you what. Kids these days. Yeah, well, you know.
Well,
what do you think, Stocky?
Well, you got any more questions? Anything you want to dump on us? Any more?
Any more dumps?
Yeah, any more dumps you got to take? You got the Will James article coming out this Friday.
I do. Yeah.
So that would be big old the dump. First.
Yep.
The first of the title? June.
Big old dump.
I'm taking a big old dump on Bill James.
Will, watch your mouth.
Will, sorry.
He was very close with him. He gets to call him Bill.
Well, actually, when I was digging through the archives, it's pretty fascinating. The Gazette just digitized all of their paper archives, so you can dig back. I don't know. As long as they've been doing this thing.
What's that going to do to the microfiche industry?
Well, I don't think that they were worried about that. I think that might have died a while ago.
We can't lose all those microfiche reader building jobs.
We've been trying to make America great again. Yeah.
That's another reason.
There goes the microfiche.
Detroit's in a downturn.
Dewey Decimal System's on crapper. I've made horrible investments.
When I was a kid, you had to squint at a screen. And I still do. Never mind. It's stupid.
Do you have contacts?
No. I have perfect vision.
Do you?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So my hindsight and my foresight are both 20/20, and my present sight. Yeah. Infallible. Anyway.
I think I lost that one.
What were you saying? No, it's fine.
It's gone with the 10 high.
Yeah. As many things are.
Oh, Sammy. That goes
Sammy's helping.
Yeah, she'll figure it out.
Good girl. We just need to get her a pair of headphones.
We do. She wouldn't be able to hear him anyway, because she's deaf, Joe.
No, it's fine. I'll turn him up.
Okay. Just vibrations to send it to everybody.
Now all I can see is Angela Lansbury.
The teapot Angela Lansbury? Or
Murder, She Wrote. That lady who very clearly killed all of the people in that town.
Yeah.
Where there was a murder a week. It was a town of like 1,000 people.
There's got to be a fan theory of Angela Lansbury being...
Oh, yeah.
This is the murderer.
Oh, I've heard about it.
Like the Inspector Gadget one where Claw is the police,
head
police guy the whole time. The guy you just see the claw with his.
You never see his face.
Never see his face.
Yeah, makes sense.
If you're ever looking for a useful time to waste, or not waste, look up fan theory on Inspector Gadget. It's a good half an hour of just mindless, stupid shit.
Have you looked up the St. Elsewhere fan theory?
I don't think so.
So, St. Elsewhere, the first, hospital drama... Well, not the first, necessarily. Maybe MASH. Anyway, St. Elsewhere. First hospital drama evening, I don't know. Everybody followed it.
Primetime TV?
Yeah. The season, or the series finale was... All these things happened... Oh, yeah, nice. All these things happened in the hospital... And then the last scene of the last episode, it zooms out from the hospital during a snowstorm, and then it zooms out far enough and you can see the hospital's in a snow globe, and this little kid's staring at it. Oh, Jesus. And the dad is standing behind the little kid, and he's just like, man, I just don't know how to connect with him since he's autistic, or I can't remember what the line is, but this little kid has apparently been staring at this snow globe the entire time, and... all these things have been happening in his mind, and his dad's just like a blue-collar guy trying to help out his autistic son and whatever, but his dad was actually, in the show, he was the lead surgeon or the director of the hospital or something. But there are so many crossovers with St. Elsewhere that spawned, other crossovers that there's this huge tree of TV shows that have a tie-in to a tie-in to a tie-in that go back to St. Elsewhere. Like, the cast from Cheers visited St. Elsewhere at one point in the 80s.
Wow.
Or one or two characters or something. And then, so Frasier's from Cheers. Mm-hmm. And then there's another spinoff that alludes to Frasier at some point, and it goes all the way into Star Trek.
You got to be more specific.
All of them.
All of them?
Because
There
is a company in one of the Star Trek episodes that made their, spaceship equipment that was alluded to during... an episode of St. Elsewhere that they were buying hospital equipment from. And they named the company and named the location where it came from. So then it's, so then everything that spins off of Star Trek is also part of this one little universe that this one little kid had staring at this little snow globe.
Hmm.
And it is fascinating. And there are a lot of weirdos out there who have done a lot of work digging into this thing. Like the Flintstones are in it.
Kids, be careful with the internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is your brain. This is your brain on the internet.
You gotta,
that's great.
You just look it up, man. It's so good.
Yeah, it's like, I think it was a John Cusack movie called Identity. That's kind of along the same lines. So it was this convicted, I want to say, murderer? But they created this entire scene, or, you know, they were in a motel, and there was this, you know, people were just getting killed off, and they, it's kind of like that. They pan back, and it's this guy with, you know, mental problems. He's just made this all up in his head. He's got the characters and everything, and it was a wonderful movie.
Yeah. Wow.
Identity.
Dig into it.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. You won't regret it. Good use of your time. Really is. Anyway, what were we talking about, Anna? Has the ship sailed? Come on. Cut loose. Let's do it.
You know, I want to start something called drunken poetry, where you basically recite poetry in people's ears at the bar at like 2 a.m.
Hmm.
That sounds weird. I've can cut that out.
I've done it.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. It's, you know, it could be a thing.
What's Scribius Pip say? Don't use poetry to get into girls' pants. Use it to get into their heads.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a big deal. It's in a song, so you know it's true.
I have a friend who has so many poems in his head. I'll just stop you on the street and recite one to you.
That's pretty cool.
That's great.
I don't know how you do it.
This episode apparently brought to you by WTF with Mark Maron.
Yeah.
He's
Hi,
a good dude.
I'm Mark Maron. Mm-hmm. Please listen to my podcast.
What's up? What the fuckers?
That's how we started. He just started fucking talking about shit and, you know, a garage and... Then he's interviewing Obama, you know?
Yeah, now he's in a new house. He's just bought a new house. There's a new garage. He's freaking the fuck out about that.
A new fucking garage?
Yeah, he sold the house. Well, I don't know if he sold it, but
he's got that sweet podcast money, man. You can't slow it down once you get that ball rolling.
Sweet podcast money.
Snowballs.
When's that royalty check coming?
Yeah, and
we've gotten like 9 so far, haven't we?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
And he's dating an artist as well.
Who?
Mark Maron.
What artist?
Himself.
Yeah, well.
Sarah the Painter, he calls her.
All right, well, that works. Hmm. Checks out. Sounds like an artist to me.
Mm-hmm. Well.
I think we've disintegrated into...
awesomeness is what we disintegrated into. thanks for coming and talking to us. We appreciate
it.
Oh,
it's so fun. Yeah. I'm glad you guys are doing this. I think it's important to have more conversations about our city and get people more engaged in making Billings the place that they want to be.
Absolutely. So, Anna Page, thanks for being with us.
Meet you at the trailhead.